Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
I am Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We're live in 3, 2, 1.
All right. Thanks, Jason. And here we are at the live.
Back at the studio.
At the Mole Hole, the Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Building, bringing you yet another podcast. This is the week after Thanksgiving, so we're all.
Mid-hunting season.
Yeah, well, it's gotten started. It's good. Yeah. So
we're still eating leftovers.
Right.
Yeah. Oh. That little voice you just heard there, that's Dudley. He's sitting over here to the west of me, I guess, and across the hall, across the table over here, where we are socially distanced in here, is Lanny.
6 feet apart right here, buddy.
Lanny Wallace.
Wallace.
Freelance rapper.
My rapping career is not real well known.
Well, you know, when we were making those sounds a few minutes ago, you looked like you were.
Now, I used to beatbox a little back in the day.
Listening, having these headphones and hearing yourself talk, you catch yourself doing stuff like that.
You know, and I'm always making noises anyways, you know, especially bird noises.
Yeah, you are a little turkey guy. Yeah. That is the most annoying thing when you're trying to turkey hunt and you're standing 10 feet away and you do that because you turn around.
I love it.
Yeah. So then we got Jason Cleveland over here producing the show. So good to see you after Thanksgiving.
Good to be here.
Oh, well. So what's going on in everybody's lives? We've been gone for a few days enjoying the holidays.
Yeah.
Turkeys,
eating.
Tell me about Hayden. You taking Hayden hunting any?
Yeah, we actually got out right when this front came through. You know, we got a little bit of snow in November in Mississippi. So I played hooky on an appointment I had. Thank you for taking care of that for me, Bobby, with the Onyx guys.
Oh.
And scooped him up. And he said, what are we doing? What are we doing? I was like, it is snowing in November in Mississippi. We're going hunting. So that's what we did.
Well, and sure. Well, I stayed here and manned the office hut. Like mm-hmm. I did manned when you hut. Went elk hunting, you know.
And, we appreciate you holding it down. We really do. But yeah, so we had a good little hunt. And he saw a lot of deer activity. A decent buck, you know, came on in, was making the scrape, doing his thing. He wanted the rut to be on, but the does would not allow that to be going on. So he's just kind of hanging out and didn't get close enough. You know, the old story, got dark on us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the range? Did Hayden get a good look at him and get to enjoy all that?
Oh, yeah, he got a real good look at him. We watched the deer for, you know, a couple hours making scrapes and doing his thing. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, had a real good time.
You know, at his age, getting to see a deer do all that kind of stuff, rubs his hand, that's exciting.
Oh, it's exciting. And, you know, he did the old, you know, I was telling him what he was doing and why he was doing it. So, it's good.
Good learning experience.
Yeah, and I was teaching him the secrets of keeping your hands warm, you know, while you're deer hunting. Yeah. It was quite interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. So, we're on the way out, you know, and it's cold. I mean, for here, it was dipping down in the 20s. The wind was ripping. Of course, we weren't quite as prepared as we should have been because we rushed out of the house. And, you know, I'm trying to teach him out carrying his gun, you know, all the things, all the little nuances that go with it. And then I could tell he was getting cold. He's like, Dad, my hands are really cold, really cold. I was like, well, just give me all your stuff and stick your hands in your pants pockets. And he goes, oh, that feels better. And I was like, you stick them way down in there. It feels real good. And he was like, oh, this is awesome. So I didn't think anything about it. You know, just one of those survival tactics that's sometimes necessary. Jumped in the truck, headed on home, and Shannon asked him how his deer hunt went. And he told every detail of it to the end. He's like, and Dad showed me how to keep my hands really warm if I need to. Hunting with a youngin' is fun.
Wow. That is – that. It, they have a way of telling stories.
He probably used different words to describe that.
I don't know if it's that. Yeah, he definitely. I mean, and, I use different words to tell him where to, you know, to – why his hand – again, his hands are in his pants pockets.
Right.
You know, and you can kind of shift them to the middle of your body and lower, and there's a warmer spot down there. So, you know, that's – but – when I told him that, I didn't describe it that way. I said, hey, stick it down there by your balls, you know. And that's how he told his mom. He's like, Mom, you're not going to believe this. My hands are really cold. I was taking my pocket. I said, Dad, show me. If I put my hands down by my balls, they don't get as cold. So.
Lord have mercy.
Deer hunting.
That's so funny.
It's a life lesson.
But that's so real. That's hilarious.
That is real.
I love it.
And never expected him to tell that. You know, that was the highlight. I wouldn't say it's the highlight of the hunt, but it was definitely the exclamation point on the
maybe he won't tell his class and his teacher.
Yeah, I hope not. But there is a possibility, that's for sure.
So Dad is innovative, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, you know. But you've done it before.
I have. Yeah. I was a little more, you know, discreet about what I was doing there. So. What about you, Dudley? I know you had a great hunting story. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I had a fun experience with my son, Dudley. We've gone out a couple times. And
how old is little Dud?
Dudley is 9. I think I killed my first deer when I was 12, but there really weren't many deer to hunt back then. But anyway, I took him to one of my favorite spots. We call it the Burn Field. It's a little upland old loading deck that we converted into a food plot, and it's kind of in a saddle. So it's really good. It's hard to hunt in the afternoon because the sun's usually in your face. And then if the wind dies down, the thermals kind of mess you up. But it was the only spot to go, and he was wanting to go, so we went. And as my luck would have it, the wind got all shifty like we didn't want it to, and we had about 15 minutes of good shooting light left, probably 30 minutes of legal light left. And I said, Dud, the wind has shifted, and literally the only place that I think a deer could come from would be that far back right corner. And we were planning on running cameras after dark and then driving 2 hours back home. And I said, why don't we just call this hunt and go play on the ride around on the four-wheeler and put out cameras. And he wanted to do that. You know, he was getting bored.
Sure.
And so we had folded up the little camo I brought to wrap around us. And I was standing up, turned around, you know, getting ready to unload the rifle and all that. And I turned around and there's two deer in the field 40 yards away eating.
Perfect.
And it was so windy that they never heard us or saw us. So we got ready, and he made a perfect shot.
That's awesome. I hadn't told you congratulations yet, but
yeah,
that and, is awesome.
It was, you know, we did all the traditional stuff. He got bloodied and took pictures.
That's a big dad day, you know? Yeah. I mean, that is huge. And a big son day, of course. But
how did he like getting a little blood rubbed on him?
He didn't. Yeah. But I told him he didn't have a choice. That's just a tradition, and he ended up enjoying it.
There you go.
Took photos and cleaned the deer, did all that stuff. He's ready to go back. So
that's good. That's the first step.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one.
And you checked a box on the father guiding situation this week, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, for sure. It may have been my best accomplishment with her so far. Right. As we've been for 2 years trying to get her a deer with a bow. Any deer.
Mm-hmm. A deer. A brown deer.
And she's shooting a little over 40 pounds, and they need to be inside 20 yards.
Right. Just, everything's got to be perfect.
Yeah, we're sitting together. But everything, Thanksgiving morning, everything worked out perfectly. Here came two adult does and walked up there and got about 25 yards, and the neighbors started shooting.
That's always happens around
that,
here.
That put them on edge, and then but they finally settled back down, and one of them walked up there at about 15 yards, and that little it's just amazing, 40 pounds. It just zipped
right through them.
Yeah, it really did. And the deer ran about 100 yards, so that was real exciting.
Piled up.
Yeah.
There's nothing like bow hunting. It's true. I'm looking forward to it. Y'all heard me talking about it, getting back to it. I mean, that's how I started, you know, and I am kind of anticipating getting back. Because Shannon's shooting her bow a little bit, Hayden's shooting his bow a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, be able to get out there and hold them.
It's special. I still maintain I still love to shoot my rifle. Though.
Oh, there's nothing like gunpowder.
Mm-hmm. It's a especially when it's really cold.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you know, there's been a if you look around, there's been a bunch of deer killed.
There is a bunch of big deer. I mean, we've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks in the Midwest, talking about the Drury crew, talking about the Lindsays, everything else. But I'm going to tell you, man, there's some big deer hitting the ground in the South.
Yeah,
I have just been shocked,
and we're just
getting started.
Just getting started on pre-rut.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some really fantastic whitetails that have been harvested already.
David McElwain killed a big deer a week or so ago.
Been hunting him over 2 years.
And Kenny Thompson killed
him. Oh, he did?
Tennessee killed a big wide deer. Really, really neat looking deer. And Christian, our own Christian, son of Jason over here.
Son of Jason.
Killed his first deer, I think.
No, what?
Yep. He sure did.
We should interview him. Yeah, or something.
Meanwhile, I missed a deer.
Boy, that's pretty tough.
How'd that happen?
It was a little bit further than I needed to be shooting, about 250 yards.
Mm. Mm.
And plus, my brother-in-law was with me, and he decided he wanted to video it with his phone. So
we had
a little bit of pressure to it.
We got proof. So this is the hair on the biologic moment of the week.
Was it a big deer?
The deer I missed?
Yeah.
It was a big doe.
That's a big deer to me. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. We ought to cut your shirt tail off.
Yeah, we can do that. That'd be great. Well, you know, there's that old board still down in the warehouse with shirt tails all over it.
It is. That's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. I got a couple up there.
A lot of shirt tails on there.
Yeah.
And little stories, little poems, little rhymes, limericks.
Yeah, those
limericks.
Those are
I haven't heard that word in a while. Old limerick.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, any other? Didn't you say somebody killed a giant deer in Mississippi?
Yeah, there's a guy. We're going to call him later today, Nathan Douglas. I saw a picture of it and I asked how to get in touch with this guy. I got a number. And we're supposed to call him later, so we'll get the full.
How big is this deer?
It's a big deer.
It's a big one.
I
hadn't heard of that.
I hadn't seen a photo yet.
I mean, what do you?
Y'all have been eating Thanksgiving and not paying attention.
I guess I hadn't been looking at my social media enough.
Well, if being a gamekeeper, you just got to know what's going on around you.
No, here we go.
Yeah, and y'all are.
Oh, almond. Was it? I don't have the right word.
Master of buck intel.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll find out. You can ask him some questions.
Where's he from? Okay, I'll just save my I'll quit grilling you. And
Bobby's like that lady at Bridge Club that knows all the gossip.
Mm-hmm. You
know, but it's with deer.
He's real strategic in the way he uses his knowledge.
Yeah. So, today's show is let's get kind of into the business side of this thing. Today's show is brought to you by Gamekeeper Butchery.
Yeah.
And I think you can tell about the Instagram side.
Yeah,
the
website. We've got a lot going on, you know. Food is I've always considered myself and have been raised as a meat hunter, you know. I enjoy one of my favorite parts of harvesting and hunting is, you know, putting the meat up. And taking care of it and feeding it to my kids, I think it's one of the best ways. We all believe that here, one of the best ways, you know, to honor the animal. So kind of fired up of it that we got the Gamekeeper Butchery thing going on. Because you can't sell, obviously, you can't sell wild game to people. That is illegal. So Gamekeeper Butchery is a farm raised, which is all about, you know, we searched the world over and found the best sources for farm-raised wild game, and then we're making that available to consumers. So, but right now we've got a couple of barbecue guys in town, the Barbecue Riot Crew and the Barbecue Ninja. They're out in camp. They're deer hunting, and they're going to be cooking some wild boar.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Excited about that. There'll be more content available online, you know, pretty soon about all that stuff. So
if a guy wanted to – you know, for a Christmas dinner coming up, he mm-hmm. wanted to have some pheasants or yes. quail or something yep. like. He can go to this website. Yep.
GamekeeperMeats.com, and he can get it. We've got we just launched some new packages, too, to make it easier for you to shop. There's like a burgers and a brats package and a wild game fowl, what we call the fowl package. And then there's, you know, selections and steak packages and stuff like that to help you kind of get there. It's a pretty big catalog of stuff out there to go check it out. But it's all delivered. You can either choose for it to be second day aired or next day aired, so it'll arrive partially frozen or completely frozen if you want to just keep it and put it up. But great, you know, I've never had what I call store-bought deer meat.
Well, you need to get into the 21st century.
So this whole process, I mean, it's really opened my eyes.
So I heard that there's alligators on here as well.
Oh, yeah, we're selling alligators. And I'd say farm-raised wild game, but the wild hogs is just one of our most popular items. It's actually, these are wild-caught hogs that are taken to a USDA-approved facility in Texas. So some of this is actually wild game, and then they're processed and then made available through there. So
we had a lot of fun doing our trials and yeah. tasting all of it.
Yeah, it was a great experience, you know. And I think, obviously, you know, food is a huge part of society and culture, and especially our culture. Speaking of, I have some desert elk sticks.
Oh, is this from yeah. that? Is
this is the
there was enough one. Meat left is on there him? Any? Yeah. Seven shots? Yeah. Something to eat?
I hope pass it over to Doug. You don't think there's any lead in here, do you?
No, we got it. I dug all those out. But I think it's y'all have eaten a lot of the alpine elk. See if you think there's a it's almost like a sweeter.
Maybe it's sagey.
It is. Well, he had definitely been rubbing on cactuses and eating cactuses and everything else. So I just want to bring a little stick in.
Well, it's delicious.
It's delicious.
For one. Did you make this?
No. I actually had a guy make this for me. But on that tip, I hope to report in the next couple of weeks, I am embarking on making my first round of deer sausage.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm fired up about it. So I got me a recipe that I kind of located and been scouring the web. So hopefully we'll be able to play the trumpets, and I will bring y'all some.
There it is.
Some homemade deer sausage. I have eaten literally hundreds of pounds of this stuff over
Mr.
the years.
Mr. Sausage.
Yeah. So.
Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited about
it. Yeah, I've done patty sausage.
Yeah.
But I've never gotten the gear, you know, the stuffer and all of that.
It's taken me years, and I finally kind of got ready. Shannon ended up killing a good deer in Oklahoma, so we got it. I've deboned it, got it aging in the refrigerator, excuse me. And I'm going to embark on my first sausage making mission.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, so tell
me. I can't believe it's my first.
What about her deer? She was a big deer.
Oh, they had a great hunt out there. Yeah. Riley killed, Terry killed. Shannon did too, all good mature whitetails.
And rumor was Riley killed a blind deer.
It looks blind in the picture.
I was picking on him because, you know, you just, the angle, you can't see the deer's eyes at all.
Yeah. I think the story is nobody thought Riley could shoot that far. That's why they let him go where he was.
He probably got down and slithered over there like a snake.
Yeah.
Riley's one of my favorite humans in the whole world, but. We love picking on him.
Yeah, we do. He's an easy target.
Yes, he certainly is. So today's show, I think, is going to be really interesting. We've got Dr. Bronson Strickland from Mississippi State, and we're going to talk about the stages of the rut.
Awesome.
So
quite timely for this part of the world.
Yeah, for the South it is. And, you know, unless you're one of these guys in Missouri or Georgia, you've probably already – been experiencing
that. Yeah, I saw some guys lamenting. I can't believe it's over with. Yeah. I'm like, oh, give me a break.
The Lindsay?
Yeah, I didn't want to have to call out who it was. But, yeah.
It's like December 1st they turned the page.
Yeah,
and they go to the late season.
Wait, hold on.
Well, I mean, you got to understand, they've probably been hunting every single day since what, mid-September?
Right, and we're just really getting going.
We're really getting going.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so anyway, so Bronson.
Yeah, going to talk about the rut.
That'll be really interesting. And then, of course, we have some
questions.
Questions. We got a little did you know fact if we have time, and then we got the call with Nathan.
Yeah, I've got an interesting question today. It's just different.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Okay. Well, Jason, we're about, it's about time to call Bronson. Why don't we,
take a break and get him called
up? Yeah, let's take a break and pay some bills and we'll do that.
When I first bought this farm a short time ago, every single field was grown up with brush 8 and 10 feet high. But it went from that to this. And even though I planted biologic with very little moisture in the ground, I was really amazed at the results. I just sat in this field with my wife as she shot her very first deer. We could not be happier. We made a memory that will last a lifetime, all because of the effectiveness of the best food plot seed on the market. Biologic is better seed, pure and simple. Log on to plantbiologic.com to learn more.
Hey, Bobby.
Dr. Bronson Strickland, is that you?
It is. It's me.
Oh, well look, I've got Lanny and Dudley and Jason. We're here in the Gamekeeper studio. We're calling to talk to you a little bit. Have you got time?
Absolutely. Bobby, for you, always.
Well, Bronson, we love having you on. You're one of our favorite. You're the first
guest. He's our first guest.
The first guest to be on here twice.
And the first guest.
He was the first guest.
And the first guest to be on. It's just, that's perfect.
My first podcast experience was with Bronson.
Oh, yeah. On the.
I'm just honored.
Well, good. Well, what's going on in your world right now?
Well, I tell you what, inquiring minds, for people like me that's been listening to your podcast, I need to know how Dudley's doing with this lack of caffeine.
I gave up on that.
He's back on the train.
So when deer season rolled around and you needed to be really sharp at daybreak, you took the coffee back up.
That's right. I just quit. I try to quit earlier in the morning than I used to. I got to where I was drinking it all day. So,
yeah, that's where I'm at, Dudley. You inspired me,
great.
Whatever it was 6 weeks ago or 2 months ago, whatever it was. And I have backed off on my coffee drinking. I stop at lunch now and it makes a difference. It really does.
I'm proud of you. It's helped me a lot too.
They only allow me one cup.
You get too jacked up if you have two or three cups.
As soon as I wake up, that's right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of coffee that gets consumed around here.
I bet.
It is nice when it's cold, though. I mean, in the summer.
So have you been hunting at all? You chasing any big
deer? I have. I can't say I'm really chasing any big deer right now, but I have been out several times and several times during bow season, several times during rifle season, and the good time is right at hand. It's
no
about to get
it.
Really good. And so later on this week and this weekend, I plan to spend a good bit of my time in a deer stand.
Oh, it's one of our
favorite times. 'Tis the season.
Yeah, and that's what we want to talk today about, is to get you to kind of, from a scientific angle, tell us what's going on during the stages of the rut. And that's what we're hoping to talk about.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just jump right in. I guess, Bobby, I'll start real general, and then we can tease apart and go wherever you want to go. But it depends on where you're at, of course, in the U.S. I'll kind of speak about us, where we're at in central Mississippi. We are getting towards what we'd call the pre-rut period. And so when you think about the annual life cycle of a buck, there's a buck with testosterone and there's a buck without testosterone. And so during the summer when they're in velvet, the coat color is different. The body musculature is all different. You know, they're essentially a different animal. So that is when they don't have testosterone or really, really low levels. And then when September rolls around and they start shedding the velvet and so forth, that's when testosterone levels are rising. That's when you see bachelor groups breaking up and bucks start to behave and look, you know, like a buck we think of during hunting season. And so for us in Mississippi, and I'm thinking for most people, there's some exceptions. We have some rutting activity in November if you're in the northwest part of the state. And you can have your peak of the rut towards the end of January, if you're in the southeastern part of the state. But for a lot of us, I kind of think of December and on into the first week of January is kind of, you know, rut month. And, but so basically we have October and largely November where bucks are more or less behaving in a, I guess a more regular pattern. They're more patternable during that time. It's basically bedding and feeding, and that's really all they have going on. But when we start getting into right now, when we start getting into the pre-rut period, that is when we start seeing their movement rates are going to increase. There's going to be a lot more movement activity during the daytime. And then when you get during the two-week period, is like what we like to break it up into, a two-week intensive pre-rut period, a two-week peak of the rut period, and then there's 2 weeks after where you're still seeing some rut activity, but we wouldn't call it, you know, post-rut. That is the time to be in the woods because, number one, they're moving during the day about twice as much as they normally do. So from a hunting perspective, that's when you need to be in the woods. And the inhibitions are down. And, you know, as probably a good example, anybody that's on social media and in any of these hunting groups, you see some of these crazy videos. I think I've seen three so far this year where somebody has either killed a doe that was in estrus. One of them I saw was someone killed a buck and a buck just walks up and, you know, starts trying to gore it with his antlers and got his hoof trying to roll him over. And a hunter might be 6 feet away. But they are singularly focused on the rut. You know, they are focused on, they want to fight that buck or they want to focus on breeding that doe. So that is the period of time, the 2 weeks pre and the 2 weeks peak rut. You know, that's when a hunter, if you want to chase a buck, that's when you need to be in the woods.
Mm. Kind of levels the playing field just a little bit there.
Sound like they're thinking with the wrong
hand. Still have the advantage, but it helps. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's so, you know, this time of year, when you in that pre-rut and you see them chasing and walking and looking and you see deer you had never seen before, you know, some of your neighbor's deer might be walking on your place and it's just an exciting time of the year to be in the woods.
It is.
Yeah, it's not like going hunting and like seeing things. That's really good.
You know, and visibly on your trail camera pictures, you start seeing those bucks' necks. You can just almost see them getting bigger.
Mm-hmm. My favorite time to run cameras is right about now when they start, you know, right when rifle season opens in Mississippi, late November, you start seeing scrapes show up and just move all of them to scrapes. At least that's what I like to do. Mm-hmm. And, You just get all kinds of deer that you didn't get during the summer, you know, with them on salt licks and stuff.
So,
and Dudley, I would add one thing to that, you know, for those of us that are interested in management, of course, and really want to dial in on, you know, our harvest regime, focusing on older bucks. It is so much easier to be able to get a good, reliable age estimate. Yeah. When they're in pre-rut or rut, you know, just because of that musculature has changed.
Yep.
You can see photos of the exact same buck from back, and even in October, they're just really not showing it yet. But you really, when you get into that pre-rut and rut phase, you can tell, like, yeah, that is absolutely a mature buck. You start also seeing the staining on the tarsals a lot more, another good indicator. So I agree with you, Dudley, from seeing bucks and then also from a management perspective, on picking some out that, you know, that buck's a target or eligible for harvest.
That's one of my favorite things to do is see those pictures.
Mm-hmm. So is it purely testosterone that starts making them that change that muscular shape?
Yeah. That's what's going on. You think about it, it just governs so much. I mean, just the increase concentration in the bloodstream of testosterone triggers them to grow bone on the top of their head. Think about that for a minute. Just the inclusion of that hormone circulating in their blood triggers, you know, that system. But yeah, that is it as well. I would say it's the combination of, think of it as a steroid, Bobby.
I was
so they've got this steroid in their system. And then they're also now utilizing their neck. So think of Dudley with those photos or on a rub line or whatever, and they're moving that neck around, you know, and they're sparring with other bucks. So probably a combination of both.
It's like when you do shoulder shrugs, by the way, down at the gym.
Well, they really transform, and it's just seemingly overnight.
Is the I understand the testosterone. There's a spike in testosterone. Is that correlate to the 6 weeks, you know, that the does go in estrus too? I mean, obviously, you know, we've always heard the does decide when the rut is, not the bucks.
Yeah, that is a great point to distinguish. So the way it works is that when a buck is in hard antler, when the velvet has been shed, he is able to breed if he has a willing participant. So you've got like 4 months or so to where when he is in hard antler and a doe was in estrus, he could breed.
Gotcha.
The problem is that he does not have a willing participant.
Right.
The problem is that the does are really focused in that, you know, it depends on the sex ratio of the deer herd in terms of the buck to doe ratio and so forth. But really, you're going to see a majority of the breeding take place in about 2 weeks and up to a month. So they're eligible, and now it's coupled with the females are putting out the signal of estrus, and that's when the chasing begins and actual breeding takes place.
So his testosterone is elevated maybe 4 or 5 months, 6 months out of the year.
Yeah, and then you'll see it when, of course, when testosterone levels drop, that's when you see him shed the antlers.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it's just about finding a willing participant at that point.
So they're basically...
I know, Bob, you know all about that, don't you?
They're basically on standby mode for about 4 or 5 months.
That makes a lot of sense, too. Another quick question, though. So when a doe comes in estrus, is that a 28-day kind of a thing?
Well, like all things, there's kind of a cycle, and mm-hmm. there's a concentration and a transformation, you know, going on physiologically. It's probably about a 48-hour period of time, 2 to 3 days or so forth. But the way we think of it is you will see this in the chasing phase. Like, she's in estrus, and the buck can detect through the pheromones she's emitting. He can detect that she's very, very close. And so the chasing and the tending may take place for a day or a day and a half. And then her physiological condition grows to a point to where she gets into what we call standing heat. Standing heat means she is now willing to literally stand and be bred. So she's not going to run out from under him. She's going to stand there and allow him to breed. And generally, that's about a 12-hour period. Wow. She might have about a three-day period where she's in, quote, in estrus, but only about 12 hours where she's in standing receptive heat. Mm.
That makes a lot of sense. Because I've always thought for some reason they would be in for a week or so, but it's only, you know, a matter of hours. No wonder they tend to them.
That has to do with, like, the lockdown,
right?
At my farm, it's right around Christmas Day. And mm-hmm. if you go deer hunting, sometimes you have a great hunt, but sometimes you won't see or hear a thing. And I just assume that there's a couple of does that are in that standing phase in some thick stuff, and that's just where all
that's
the bucks
are.
And you wonder, like, a week ago, I saw 7 or 8 young bucks running around mm-hmm. on my power line, and then all of a sudden they just disappear. And I've always assumed that's what was going on.
Is lockdown, Bronson, is that when they're standing, or is that when they're in that tending?
Right before the standing phase, I think is what he's talking about.
Well, I guess I would explain it like this. If we're talking about an individual, lockdown would be when she is in standing. However, at a population scale, you've got a lot of different does that are in pre-estrus, estrus, standing, et cetera, that's occurring over about a 2 week period. So Dudley is exactly right. There may be that day or two or three where there is half or a third or two thirds of the females may be in that standing heat period. But there's still, at a population scale, there are going to be some that are coming into estrus or going out where you still might see some of that activity. It's just across the board, there may be a little bit less visibility because, again, a proportion of the does are in standing heat. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sure does.
And
Lanny.
Yes, sir.
Lanny, to address the 28-day deal you brought up, that's an important number too, but kind of different. The 28-day cycle comes in where if, and this rarely occurs nowadays, if in the 1960s and 70s, it occurred a lot. Nowadays, if a female is not bred, she will cycle again 28 days later.
Huh.
And the reason I said back in the 70s and so forth, when sex ratios in the old days were so skewed, so think, you know, it's deer season, meaning it's buck season, anything with some visible antler gets harvested. Mm-hmm. When you get to the part of the hunting season where it's the rut, heck, you may have killed 80, 90, you know, percent of the adult bucks on the landscape, it would be possible. And so you may not have, in that circumstance, enough adult bucks to, quote, cover all of the does as they are coming into estrus. Therefore, you will have a recycling. And then, you know, about a month later, you would get what's called the second rut. But we don't see that as often nowadays because we're protecting young bucks. Most people are managing. And you have enough adult bucks on the landscape to breed does in their first estrus cycle.
I've heard that story. One of them comes to mind, a friend that hunts near the Big Black in Mississippi. Like in late January, he saw like 13 bucks chasing one doe in one afternoon. Yeah.
Poor girl.
And he was like, holy cow. So, obviously she didn't get bred the month before.
She's thinking she should have got that done the first time.
And he just happened to be in the right place at the right time. But he couldn't get an arrow into one because he said
quit running. No, that's the only thing crazy. I don't like about the rut. The people won't stay still.
Yeah. You got to yell at them.
When I was in school in South Texas, I saw that four or five times. Yeah, it is just a sight to behold. It's incredible. And Dudley, like on the Big Black, what's going on there, most likely what's going on is either that doe was probably bred. Let's assume it's a yearling or older doe, an adult doe. Mm-hmm. She was probably bred on her first estrus cycle. But for lack of a technical term, it didn't take.
Right.
She didn't get pregnant.
Gotcha.
Or the alternative is that, and this is a majority of the time when we, quote, have our second rut, or some people say it's a little trickle rut or something like that. Those are in fawns. Places where those are fawns. That's right. Fawns come into estrus.
Hmm. Interesting.
And that doesn't happen very often. That doesn't happen in Mississippi very often. In the Midwest, it can happen a great deal. One of my buddies, Mick Hellickson, grew up in Iowa, and his research and data collected by their state wildlife agency, you might have more than half, the number 70% comes to mind, I may be off a little bit, of their fawns could come into estrus, doe fawns come into estrus.
Oh, wow.
In Mississippi, you are really, really in a good place and have fawning dates at the appropriate time to where if you had 15% of your fawns bred, that'd be really, really good. That's abnormally high. It's usually less than 10%.
Okay.
Well, I tell you, we learn something every time we have Bronson on.
Telling you. There's a wealth of knowledge there.
I think that's why he got that nickname.
The
Dr. Know-it-all. Yeah. There it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Know-it-all.
Hey, go Bronson.
You can take that a couple ways now, guys. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah, we mean it in a very positive way.
Yeah, we do.
So Bronson is it's Dr. Bronson Strickland, and he is an extension wildlife specialist with Mississippi State. And Bronson, do you actually teach courses over there?
Well, it's changed a little bit over my time with MSU. When I started, when I was my first 5 years as a professor, I taught one class. I mean, you know, a literal classroom in Thompson Hall class, and it was what we call our capstone course, which is wildlife and fisheries practices. And that's where it's typically seniors, sometimes juniors, and they're assigned a property. And they work with a landowner or organization, and they have to write a management plan. That was my only in the classroom teaching. Now I've moved entirely to my extension or my outreach appointment. And so my teaching is primarily workshops and seminars. And now, kind of like what we're doing now, my teaching has mainly moved to podcast, and we're growing our YouTube channel, doing seminars in that regard. So it's more working. It's a teaching appointment, but it's more in the field with stakeholders, hunters, landowners, and doing stuff like we're doing now.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
We need that.
It really is.
We need somebody to talk to.
I saw where you guys seem to kind of be merging your podcast. Do you know what I'm talking about? Marcus,
yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that picture?
You bet. So we had great success. I mean, I'm so very lucky and fortunate that there's people that listen to Gamekeepers and people listen to the type of podcast we have called Deer University. And it's a podcast all about deer biology and management, just the stuff we're talking about here. And we launched that in 2017 and just had, from an academic perspective, keep in mind, I'm not talking about like it's this world-class Joe Rogan experience podcast, but we got a lot of feedback. We got a lot of downloads, a lot of listens, and basically the only criticism we ever got, Steve Damaris and I, with the podcast was, we love what you're doing. We want more. Can you do more? And so we did that for about 2 years, and what we decided to do was, Steve and I are kind of at capacity. We're doing as much as we can do, but we thought we would bring more people in and more expertise and kind of broaden the platform that we're using, which is this nomenclature of university. So we're going with what we're calling Natural Resources University, and we're adding a podcast on habitat called Habitat University, everything that the management ecology of habitat. And that's based in the Midwest. That's going to be a specialist from Iowa State and a specialist from Purdue. Then Marcus is going to be leading one called Fire University. It's going to be all about prescribed fire. And Marcus is going to talk a lot about turkey as well. Big turkey hunter. He loves turkey management and habitat management related to that. And we are adding in one called Pond University, which is about the management on the aquatic side. How to manage for fish, how to manage for bass, bluegill, all that kind of stuff, and the science and ecology behind that to help people manage those systems. So Dudley, thank you for the opportunity. So we're not reducing whatsoever the Deer University side of it. We're just adding these other topic areas to hopefully grow a bigger audience.
Gotcha. I like it.
Wow. Well, if you ever need any guests, you know, people that think they know everything.
Dudley be glad to sign up.
Or Lanny. We'll send you Lanny.
Lanny, I've been listening. He's a long-tailed cat expert, I've learned.
Well, I don't know about expert. I know what I saw. I mean, I was.
He's got an honorary degree.
I know what he saw, too.
Yeah. I can't get anybody to 100% agree with me, Bronson, but I can't get anybody to 100% disagree with me either. So
he's got an honorary degree in monkey business. Yeah. So that goes a long way.
It's just culture.
Yeah. So
we'll get on to Bobby's Bigfoot quest, you know, later on in the series here.
Have you had any long-tailed cat adventures, Bronson?
I have not. I'll tell you one thing where I can relate to Lanny, though. When I was a graduate student, I was in South Texas, and so I was outside of a little town called Carrizo Springs, which is right on the Rio Grande, and so in that country down there, there are long-tailed cats, you know, the mountain lions, cougars, but they're very rare in terms of you seeing them. They're on the landscape, and when you're doing deer surveys, flying the helicopter, every other two or three years or so, you know, you might see one out of the chopper. But I mean, it's a very rare occurrence.
Yeah. Sure.
But Lanny, one day, I'm driving down the road, and the road down there, big old long dirt road, you can see for, you know, 300 yards or so. And man, I would bet my right arm, I saw a long-tailed cat cross the road. And it's still etched in my memory, you know, today.
Yeah.
The odds are that far away, because it probably was 300 yards away. The odds are it may have been a coyote, you know. It may have been a bobcat, but I sure wanted it in my mind. I wanted it to be, you know, a mountain lion. And I know what I saw, you know, it's in my memory, but I can't swear.
So
I don't know for certain.
So you're saying there's a chance, Bronson.
Well, I can believe it.
Saying there's a chance.
Well, I mean,
I'm telling you there's a chance.
There it is.
He'd probably have a better chance of seeing a Jaguarundi down there than you did in Mobile.
Yeah. I went in Mobile now. I was in the Mobile Basin. Okay. Which is a big area. No.
Well, Bronson, we sure appreciate you having on. Now, I'm going to give everybody y'all's website. It's msudeerlab.com. And then one that I'm really interested in is wildpiginfo.com.
Oh, nice.
That's it. Yeah. So anybody, if, you know, a lot of people in Mississippi and the South are unfortunately dealing with pigs, that we kind of made that a warehouse or a clearinghouse. It can be as complicated as you want it to be in terms of the articles we have there. And it can be as simple as you want it to be, because we have videos, we have experts providing video. We even have diagrams if you want to build a corral trap and different trap doors and so forth. So
that's a drawing, Bobby.
Just about anything you're looking for, you can probably find there. Yeah.
So are we getting close to having some kind of feed that would sterilize these pigs? I've heard rumors of that.
I'm not going to say. I think there's more progress, Bobby, on the toxicant part than there is on the contraceptive part. Mm-hmm. And so toxicant meaning, you know, you're going to eat a fatal dose of some chemical and it's going to kill you. The stakes are very high. I mean, you can imagine putting a toxic bait out on the landscape. You got to be careful. Mm-hmm. You got to be real careful. Right. There's a lot of collateral damage can happen.
Sure. Absolutely.
So we have two competing toxicants right now that are in various stages of either EPA approval or state level approval. One of them is based on sodium nitrite, and one of them is based on warfarin, which is a blood thinner that we human beings take. Trade name on that, Coumadin. A lot of people take that as a blood thinner. We were talking about, I had a big meeting yesterday, in fact, with a lot of the pig management experts in Mississippi. And we were just thinking about that. When we started doing these educational workshops on pigs about 12 years ago, we were saying we're 1 or 2 years away. And that was over a decade ago. But I really think now we are a year or two away from having an approved toxicant. But at the same time, guys, it's not going to be the magic bullet. It's not going to be that you just go spread the stuff around, pigs eat it, and your problem solved. It's going to be highly regulated. You're going to have real specific instructions on where you can put it, when you can put it out, because you don't want deer to eat it. If you're in an area where there's black bears, et cetera, you got to protect your native wildlife resources as well. So there'll be a lot of constraints on it, but it'll be, like we always say, it'll be another tool in the toolbox that we hope to have available.
That's great.
Yeah, that really is. Because, this time of year, I'm running a lot of cameras, and I see pigs. I've got a lot of pigs on a place that I hunt, and you never see deer and pigs together.
No.
Ever. And
exactly.
And you walk through an area, it looks like a bomb went off. They are competing for those acorns that are dropping right now, and they're out competing the deer, I think.
And they're a hell of a competitor.
Absolutely.
They don't have any acorns, they'll eat gravel.
Let me tell you a little statistic. Ought to frighten you a little bit. I'm a little bit, you know, I'm sad and I'm mad at the same time. It's something we saw coming. Again, going back to these seminars and workshops we did on wild pig management more than a decade ago, I have access, of course, my colleagues at NDWSMP and the data they get every year from hunter surveys. You know, what'd you kill? What'd you see? Et cetera. And, you know, in the 2005, 6, 7, we started seeing this disturbing trend of the number of pigs people are harvesting every year most of them just while they're deer hunting, you know, just opportunistically. I mean, the deer stand, see a pig, kill it, which we're glad they did, of course. And we started seeing that, you know, hey, about 10,000 pigs were killed this year by deer hunters, about 15,000. And it started creeping up 20, 25,000. Now, but before I deliver the punchline, let me tell you, it used to be in Mississippi, we were harvesting anywhere between 200 to 250,000 deer a year. That's kind of the number oscillating up and down, 200, 225, 250, et cetera. Well, about 2 years ago, we actually saw more wild pigs harvested in Mississippi than deer.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
More than 300,000 pigs were killed during hunting season, more than whitetail deer. So if that's not a statistic for hunters that ought to have you concerned.
Yeah, and we're not knocking a dent in them. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So we're doing better. We've got all these programs now. We have education, like we're talking about with our website and other programs, teaching people how to do it. We have USDA and their programs in parts of Mississippi, like in the Delta. The aerial gunning is taking place. We got a lot of different programs now with Mississippi Department of Ag and Commerce. They have a program, kind of a loan a trap program. So, I mean, a lot of pigs are getting taken off the landscape, but it's that exponential growth that they have. It's you know, when you have these sounders, when a sow can breed at 6 months of age and she can have 4, 5, 6 piglets that live. And then 6 months later, you know, those females are breeding again. The growth rate, you know, we just have to have a much heavier harvest rate on pigs to keep the populations in check. So I guess I would just encourage everyone to please take that serious. And you can't do it by yourself. You can't manage pigs on an island, is what we say. If you're on a 200 or 300 or 400 acre property and your neighbors are not cooperating with you, you're going to lose in the long term. So get these cooperatives together, get some of these smart traps where you can really be efficient, get a sounder of 10 to 20 pigs at a time.
And share it with your neighbors.
Share it with your neighbor. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, that's great advice, Bronson. It really is. And I can hear it in your voice. I know how serious you are about this. And it's something, if we as gamekeepers across the landscape don't do something about, it's going to be a big problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It already is. You know, it depends, like you're saying, Bobby, it depends on the property you own. It already is a big problem, but it's going to be a bigger problem for everyone if we don't do something about it. So, yeah, thank you for that opportunity to get on my soapbox there, but I'm very passionate about getting these things under control.
Yeah, we can
hear
it.
No question about it.
Well, Bronson, we've enjoyed having you. Is there anything else we've given at your websites? And do you want to give out your Instagram page or anything there?
Hey, I do have an announcement along with the Deer University podcast. And I don't know, guys, when this episode will be dropped. Hopefully, by that time, it's going to be available in your favorite podcatcher, meaning you're going to be able to go to Apple Podcast or Google Podcast or Stitcher or whatever. Should be in the next few days available for download there. So just search it, find it, please subscribe. The other, Steve Damaris and I have been working on for the past several months, and I have been the problem. I have not gotten my job done, is we are also developing an online program. So we're going to have the audio stuff with podcasts, and then we're also moving into an online workshop or seminar series. So essentially the workshops that Steve and I used to do years ago across the state in the Southeast, where we would do a 1 day or 2 day, everything about deer management 101, we are putting that online. And it's basically going to be narrated presentations just like we normally give. And we'll do an announcement on social media, and maybe I can send you a note if y'all could maybe advertise that as well. But that's going to be available hopefully in January. So we're going to have the audio versions, we'll have video versions, and everything about deer will be available for anybody to download and listen to.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, we're going to be supportive of anything you guys got going on. So you
we appreciate it.
Yeah, you just let us know. So, well, look, we're going to let you go. I know we've kept you long, and I think you might be going hunting this afternoon. So we wish you the best of luck, and send us pictures if you if you do have some success.
Yeah, let us know.
I'll be glad to.
I want to talk about the rut some more, too.
Well, we'll have him back.
Yeah, he can sure come back.
Will. Yeah. Next week we can talk about it. Whenever. I'm in the mood to talk about the rut.
Yeah,
isn't it? Because we're at it right
now.
I
don't know why it's so top of mind right now. I don't know what it is.
That sounds good. And we're going to talk about ducks at some point.
Hey, we like them ducks.
We really appreciate you. And stay in touch, okay?
Yes, sir. We'll talk to you guys soon. Bronson. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Bronson.
Have a good one.
Hope to see you soon, buddy.
All right.
So that was Dr. Bronson Strickland. He's with Mississippi State, and he is such a smart guy.
Oh, man. He's a great guy all the way around. Yeah. Pleasure to be around. No
sure
question
is.
About it.
Well, look.
And puts up with us.
He does.
Not many, you know, academia people like to put up with our horseplay too much, so.
He's a good guy. Yeah. I like him a lot. So, look, we got to get Nathan Douglas and talk about his deer. I think y'all are going to find that interesting.
Man, I'm ready to talk to this guy.
And so let's run a commercial, pay some bills, and we'll get, let's see if we can get Nathan on the telephone.
The Big Deer Slayer.
All right.
Hey, folks, it's Jeff Foxworthy. You know, when I was a kid, my dad bought back the farm that he had grown up on, and I absolutely loved that place. I knew every square inch of it. It truly was my favorite place on earth. And when you're looking to find a favorite place for you and your family, Mossy Oak Properties can help. Visit mossyoakproperties.com to begin your search today.
Hello.
Is this Nathan Douglas?
Who wants to know?
Well, Mr. Douglas, this is Bobby Cole and Lanny Wallace and Dudley Phelps.
Nathan, how are you?
We're with the Gamekeepers podcast, and we had heard that you killed a big deer, and we
wanted what? To, say again now. Who? I don't know who you are.
We're with the Gamekeepers podcast, and
Game ESPN type game?
No, Gamekeepers. It's a we've got a magazine and a TV show and Gamekeepers, yes. And we had heard that you killed a big deer, and we wanted to try to
Mississippi
ask you a few questions about it.
How'd you get this number?
Well, it was given to me by a guy that saw a picture of the deer and texted it to me and said that I needed to get in touch with you.
All right, then.
So, did you kill a big deer this past week? It was over Thanksgiving, I think.
Yeah, matter of fact, I did.
This is my kind of guy right here. yes, no.
Well, how big was he?
What?
How big was he? How big were his antlers?
How big was he?
The deer.
You there?
I'm here, Mr. Doug. I'm trying to determine just how big the deer was. How big was he?
Your buck deer.
Oh, he was, he had 13 points on him, and he weighed about 190 with his guts out.
That's a big body deer. So what did he score? Can you tell us that?
Score? I'd say I'm the one that scored.
Hey, that's my kind of guy. Nathan.
How did you, can you tell us a little bit about the hunt?
Well, I guess so. I'm still a little confused about all this, but you seem to be up front. It was Thanksgiving. We got up and went down. We were hunting on the old Haney farm, and it was me and my boy. His name is Arnold. He's 13 years old, but he's big for his age. And he'd been down there running traps down there, and said that he seen a big buck deer down there, and we went down there, and I went down by the old house place, and there's a chimbley up there, and always been a lot of deer in there, and he went down, I guess, toward the fence line. I'm not really sure. I just made sure he weren't in the direction that I was shooting in. Because we all about safety.
Yeah, that's good.
And there's an old catch pen down there, and I was up there sitting on a bucket, to be honest, and just got my shotgun loaded up. And
shotgun?
Yeah, shotgun. I that's all I use. A lot of folks like rifles, but I like shotguns and have pretty good luck with it, and that's what I use. I loaded it up, and I bet I weren't there 30 minutes and heard a noise down there, and here he come. And I let him have it. You know, I was pretty lucky. I got him on the third shot. You know, the way I load up, I always fill her up. I usually start with a slug, and then it's buckshot, 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 and then slug. And, you know, there's a lot of people just kind of mix them one right after the other. But that's the way I done. That's the way my dad taught me. And you know, the theory behind that is, you know, slug, you're hoping he's going to be standing still.
Right.
And, you know, if you don't connect with that first, then he's going to be running. And that's where the buckshot comes in. And you just lay that buckshot down, and you got your last shot to slug. If a lot of times he'll, you know, stop and look or slow down and look back what happened, and you might get a good slug shot at him again.
Oh, Hail Mary.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Long as there's Hail Mary, there, there's hope.
I didn't realize people still hunting with buckshot anymore.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, it's hard to get it sometimes, but it's hard to get any kind of ammo out there from what I hear.
Mm. Yeah, it is.
But, he broke him down on that third shot and went nose-dive down, and that was it.
Well, and he weighed 190 pounds of field dress. See, I wish you could tell us how big the antlers were. I'm trying to understand 13 points, but the picture I saw, he looked really big.
Can we post this on?
Yeah, he's a good one.
I'd love to see the picture.
I cut the horns off and put them on top, throw them up on top of the shop up there.
Get some sun on them. Be sure they bleached out right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we eat them around here. We don't waste none of it. But you know, them horns don't even make good soup.
You're not getting them mounted.
No, we don't. No, that's a waste of money.
Yeah.
You know, anybody around here knows all they got to do is go out there and look on top of the shed back there, and that speaks for itself. Yep. But you know, we shoot doe deer when it's time. You know, like I said, we eat them. Mama really likes them. She likes, you know, burritos and them jalapeno snack sticks. I just kind of puzzled on how on earth you found out. I don't usually tell a lot of folks.
Do you think the deer was in rut?
I think, his neck was looked like it was beginning to swell up a little bit, and them tarsal glands were dark. But you know, he'd been running does. That's what my boy said. He seen him when he seen him down there. He was running doe.
That was Arnold.
Arnold.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. He 13.
Yeah. Well,
big old boy.
He's over 6 foot tall.
And he's 13.
He's heavy, you know, but
he's like Lanny.
I tell you this much. He's strong. I was very glad to have him, you know, drag that deer out of there. Miss Pearl gave us permission to hunt there, and you know, we got to get him in and out of there quick, because I don't want all the neighbors seeing.
Oh, no.
Right. Well, Mr. Douglas, we appreciate you letting us call you and tell us your story. And we hope you have a good rest of the deer season and a good Christmas. And
well, yeah, you're welcome. I didn't hear everything you said. You breaking up there, but
You're welcome to, you know, you can go to the podcast, Apple Podcast, and listen to this next week, and you'll be able to listen to yourself on there and give us a rating.
Well, we ain't got no computer.
Okay.
So, but anyway, I appreciate it. I really, I gotta go. I gotta fella's supposed to be coming by looking at some goats, and I don't want to miss him. But I thank you now here.
Bye. All right. Well, thank you there, Mr. Douglas.
I think he just hung up.
Well, yeah. All right. So why don't we move? That was exhausting. Why don't we move on and do some Ask Gutsy?
I bet that deer's Polaroid is at the local gas station, yeah. Right by the coffee machine.
Oh me!
I didn't know anybody shot buckshot anymore. Whew. All right, so Jason, why don't we ask Dudley a question and let's get this thing back on track.
All right.
Once in a generation, a mind comes along, a mind that understands more than the average person and is more than willing to share his knowledge. From trees to food plots to fertilizer, Dudley Phelps knows so much that he has forgotten more than he remembers. And now he gives you the chance to ask the burning questions in your mind. It's time for Ask Dudley.
Hey, Dudley, this is Jason Hooper from Calhoun, Georgia. I have a question. I've got two food plots planted in brassicas, clover, and wheat, and it's on a 40-acre tract of thin pines. Each plot is approximately 12 feet wide by 300 yards long. Plot A, I limed and fertilized. Plot B, I only fertilized. My question is, why does plot A look like an ad in your magazine, but the deer aren't touching it, while plot B is eating in the dirt? I would think it would be the opposite. Let me know what you think. Thank you, sir.
I love that question.
That's a great question.
And I kind of pondered us using it just because it's kind of off the wall.
Yeah.
A lot of factors.
So help me right quick.
He did. I'm assuming these are like long fire lanes.
Right.
Or like, you know, sometimes they'll do third row thinning mm-hmm. in the pines and you have a really long
strip.
Yeah. And for a few years, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years, there is enough sunlight getting through before the pines fill back in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so.
But he limed one and fertilized it.
He limed one and fertilized it.
And then he just fertilized.
He just fertilized.
And they're not eating the one that.
They're not eating the prettier one that was limed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is rather unscientific.
I've already got a theory.
I got to throw that out there. It is on the same 40. But, mm-hmm. you know, the first thing I would tell him is look up Webb Soil Survey on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a government website. You can.
Huge resource.
Yeah, you can. Look at your topography and but it tells you the exact soil type. So one theory is that one ridge he's got it on that isn't limed, it may be a better soil type. It may have a higher CEC, may have more organic matter, possibly making the plants. It may already have a pH that's naturally a little higher. I don't know. But I think you can throw all of that out of the water. And this isn't like a replicated study. We're just talking about two strips. It's not like, you know, where you go in and do four different spots and
cafeteria test.
Right. So my theory on that, Jason, is that you may just have a couple of resident deer that happen to bed closer to that one area that they're just, that's where their little food source is. And as soon as the lights go out, they're there eating it all night. The other spot may be further away from some cover or something like that. But yeah, my other thought is maybe it's just naturally a slightly better soil type. So even though in theory, I mean, you've amended the other one with lime, it may just be that spot they've eaten is
still isn't as good or is still better.
Still better.
I'm going to throw something out.
I mean,
there.
My farm, I've got a bunch of little bitty plots and they're spread out. The roads are too narrow. I've got fields I hadn't limed in 15 years just, you know, because of my budget and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they're still very productive soils and I have good results. I don't think that's normal, but.
I kind of wonder if he's had a frost on his food plot yet, you know. And the only thing I'm going with here is.
Oh, I've got something that you don't know.
All right.
This question is 3 weeks old.
Gotcha.
So there was not a frost.
We're not a frost. And is it possible that
part of Georgia? Yeah.
I think kind of southerny. Yeah. But
go ahead, Lane.
So maybe the when those brassicas are growing, they're not as tasty as they are until after they get the frost. However, if the soil conditions may be not as ideal, they would remain in that younger, tender stage longer.
Could be.
Just throwing it out there.
You know, you've got that, you hear about rank growth.
Right. That's what I was thinking, rank
maybe
growth.
Maybe the limed plot grew so fast and healthy that it's almost gotten woody.
Right.
And they, yeah.
That's a really
and so
good
they
scenario.
Preferred the younger plant tender, that was actually succulent. On, and they're probably pulling them completely up out of the ground and it's over with. But when that super established plot gets a frost on it, which does something y'all know. I'm not the scientist.
Right. Starches turn to sugars. So.
Bricks, is that right?
Yeah.
Some kind of sugars. Yeah. It's sweeter.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll see a different kind of a reaction.
Very interesting.
Georgia doesn't get a frost until late. Sometimes they may not get a frost in South Georgia.
Right.
So there's another theory. When he said he couldn't get lime to the other plot, it made me think that it was more remote, harder to get to. And it may be that plot has no pressure on it, and the deer feel there's more comfortable feeding there. And the other plot could be closer to the road. It could be that they get bumped off of it a lot.
So, Jason, those are I guess we're trying to help you narrow it down, and those are all.
So good. Let's do this. Let's offer Jason, if you would.
Let's rehook back up with him,
and let's do a soil test for him. Let's get him to send some dirt to the biologic labs and on us. We'll pay for the test and let's start there and analyze that and see if we can help figure out what went on and then have him back on later and explain.
Yeah. Maybe we can send some frost down there and see what happens.
Yeah. and also
you'll be in charge of that. Okay.
Somewhat off topic, but my buddy Chad called me the other day and asked me a similar question. His plots had gotten really tall and rank and woody, and he asked if he could cut them back. You know, I think a lot of people used to do that.
Yeah.
You bush hog it because you want that
tender new growth.
And I said, dude, there's acorns all over the woods.
Right.
It's going to get cold soon. The deer will eventually eat it. You know, right? I would leave it because that's more food for the deer.
100%, especially when they're in the super stress period, you know, when there's nothing left to eat. One of the major things when we introduced biologic was seeing those northern fields where there was nothing but a snowy landscape and those deer were still digging up and eating those brassicas. It's, you know, it's like, impressive.
It's plant. Like food in the refrigerator.
Yeah, right. Really so, is. Yeah, Jason, I wouldn't be too concerned because once they eat that one to the dirt,
they probably will move
on to your other spot. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to circle back with them. That'd be cool. See what's going on with that.
Well, good deal. All right. Well, that was a great question,
that
Jason.
Was a great
we appreciate
question.
You sending that in. So, well, look, we've been at it a long time. I think hopefully we haven't put everybody to sleep. Dr. Brunson was good.
He had some great
insight. I don't know about Nathan. I'm not
sure.
Yeah,
I'm not sure about Nathan. Yeah.
Old Nate dog.
Yeah. Old Nathan.
So does anybody else have anything to add? I'd like to make sure that the Gamekeeper Butchery website, we give that out. What is that? www?
It's gamekeepermeats.com.
Gamekeeper. That sounds like a dating website. But
Gamekeeper Meats. Oh, my goodness.
M-E-A-T.
Pull it out of the gutter there, bro.
Dating? I'm not.
Hey, baby, that'll be our next venture.
All right. So it's gamekeepermeats.com. Yeah, y'all check that out. That is a really interesting
website. I think that'd be a really fun thing for like corporate gifts.
Oh, yeah.
So folks that, you know, may buy pears or something to send to their clients.
Right.
Send them some meat.
Our ultimate goal is just to be a huge resource, you know, not only for actual, you know, the meat part of it, but also for recipes and all the different, you know, care tactics. So look for a lot more, from not only the Gamekeeper Meats, but also from Aussie Oak on food-related content.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. All right. Well, let's ease on out of here. Dudley, why don't you say goodbye, Dudley?
Goodbye, Dudley.
All right, Lanny.
Get us out of here, Cleve.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife Magazine. And don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt Podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.